Hi, guys, and welcome to Cycles News and Views. It is March the 8th, and I have with me again Peter Elides. Peter, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Good to be with you again. Always enjoy our conversations.
Yes, same here. Peter, I've had, over the last month or so, I've had some requests for us to get back together, but, you know, we've both kind of been waiting. In my world, to kind of lay it out, you know, we had a trading and intermediate term cycle low February 9th. There was some iffiness in the beginning about the trading cycle low and even the intermediate term cycle low, but there's no question now that, that's what that was, trading intermediate low. And from a Dow theory perspective, because it was an intermediate degree low, it was also a secondary low point. And that said, you know, we're kind of set up here. Nothing's really materialized yet, but looking at the structure of the market through my eyes, you know, it's a little dicey, as I would say. I mean, and when I say dicey, I mean the market's on thin ice. If this wanted to turn, the structure is such that it could get ugly quick. But at the same time, it's kind of held up. Nothing's really materialized. So it could also mend itself. And my take is if we mend here, then we're probably going to go on up into that next seasonal cycle advance with new highs. If we don't mend here, then there could be something more going on in the sense that, you know, there's at least another intermediate term down in cycle down into the seasonal cycle low. So that said, I also had some questions about your sign of the bear. And how does this all fit in with your work? What do you see? Let's lay it out for them.
Sure. You know, just to have a little fun, Tim, I've always thought, what would happen, those of us that do this for a living, and what a crazy way to make a living it is, but those of us that do it for a living and claim to have a certain level of expertise, I've often wondered what it would sound like if I called you or you called me and one of us were to say, you know what, Tim, I don't have the vaguest idea what's going on here. I have no concept of whether we're going to go up or down. I don't have any idea where the market's long-term trend is. And furthermore, I don't care anymore. But, of course, we can't do that. But you must admit that from time to time there is that frustration when you think you have a pretty good handle on the market and it kind of hangs around for a while like it's been doing now and doesn't make a commitment one way or the other. There are a couple of things that have happened here. You know, I'm not a big guy for these curvilinear drawings that people do and the parabolic lines that are drawn. But just for fun, a couple of weeks ago, I did draw on TradeStation software, you can draw these little parabolic arcs. And I had this perfect parabolic arc set up on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And it hit a whole bunch of highs, and then one point after another on the way up, it just kept getting higher and higher, and the rate of ascent kept building and building and building. And then January 26th, of course, we reached that high. And if you look at that ascending parabola, we broke down hard from that, just the way you should do if you break a parabolic rise. And the decline that we had, Tim, from January 26th over the next 9 trading days, I could only go back to 1926, which is almost 100 years, not quite. But I can tell you that there has never been a greater percentage decline off an all-time high within 9 days than the one we saw starting January 26th. I wish I could tell you I know, and I'm sure that means something, but I can't do that. But what I can tell you is it's exactly the kind of decline, the kickoff move to the downside percentage-wise that we might expect to see if this is going to be as important a top as I think it has a chance to be. We were down within the first 9 days about 10.13%, or maybe even 10.3, a little bit over 10% either way, on a closing basis on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. That had never happened from an all-time high before. We had, within that period of time, we had never gone down that 10.1 or 10.3% or more as we did this time around. And so that's point number one, and I think it's an important one because that's the kind of break you would expect once that parabolic rise is broken. So we've had two things to talk about just in that formation alone. We had a parabolic rise in the Dow, and you had a break, which was the greatest 9-period drawdown. And I don't mean just specifically 9 days, any drawdown within 9 days, from 1 to 9 days from an all-time high. This was the greatest percentage down move that we've seen in the history that I have of the Dow, going back to, as I said, the mid-1920s. So that's point number one. We have something that happened that I think is very important. Now, after something like that happens, you'd expect to see a little backing and filling, and we had a record decline within a record short period of time, and indeed we've been doing the backing and filling. But we've now come to a time zone and a price zone, I think, where if that was indeed an important market top, we need to start to see the market turn itself down again. I'm looking at a chart as I'm talking to you of the New York Composite Index. I like the New York Composite Index because very few people look at it, and we know that it includes every stock on the New York Stock Exchange, so you cannot say it's not a broadly based index. And it tends to give me my most accurate price projections, too. And as I'm looking at it, just on a simple technical basis, it happens to be a closing price chart. I drew a simple trend line from the all-time high close on January 26th through the secondary top that occurred almost a month later. In fact, it was exactly a month later on February 26th. So on January 26th, we had an all-time high. On February 26th, exactly a month later, we had a secondary high. If you draw a trend line through those two high closes, they will take you virtually exactly to today's close. In other words, today's close moved up almost exactly to that trend line. They had missed by a tiny bit. I think the trend line's at like 12,754, and we closed at 12,754, and we closed at 12,745. So within 9 points, which is a very small percentage on the New York Composite Index. So we're coming to the first test now of what you might call something that the bulls would like to see us get above. Now, a couple of things could happen. We could turn down immediately from here, and that shouldn't be surprising because we had that initial thrust to the downside, and now we've returned back to a trend line that defined the primary high and the secondary high that we've seen since the January 26th top. Another thing that could happen is we could slightly break that trend line. The market has a tendency to do that from time to time, just to fool people that claim to be technicians and say, whoa, look at this, we got a breakout to the upside, and a day or two later just turn around and go to new lows again. And of course, the other obvious thing that can happen is the market just laughs at the decline and said, that was just a little scare out thing, you guys. We're going up to new highs again, so keep your eye on us.
Well, let me tell you one very negative thing I'm looking at is, you know, when I first started, you know, years and years ago, you know, looking at technical analysis, was first introduced to it and so forth, and I heard someone say, let the market tell you what it's going to do, and you know, eventually I learned to figure that out, and in my world today, that's the structure. You know, the structure has meaning. If you have a certain structure, then it tells you, based on probability, what should happen. And right now we're kind of between those points and waiting on the structure to tell us something. But if we look at that said, like I said, we had the intermediate term low in on February the 9th. And if it proves that we've got the intermediate term top here, then it's left translated, which means we've got another intermediate term cycle, another entire intermediate term cycle down into the next higher degree low, which is, you know, going to take us down for several months. So it's very negative, but like you said, we're kind of in between. With that said, if you look at the American Stock Exchange, we've already violated, if I remember right, I don't have a chart in front of me, but we violated that February low already on the American Stock Exchange, have we not?
Interesting.
And so what that means is that on the American Stock Exchange, we should have that left translated intermediate term cycle pretty much locked in place. And that's a very obviously a very negative development.
Yeah, to I mean that cycle tends. I think you should let people know that that cycle tends to run how long, and what kind of a left translation. Within how many days have we come up to? Did we come up to a high that we've now penetrated below the previous low?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the cycle on average it runs about 20 months. 20 weeks. And so to have topped, and I think it was, 11 days from the, at least on the industrials, I think we were down 9 into the February 9th low, and then we rallied 11 days into the high. I don't remember how many days it was into the high on the Amex, but if we have broken and we have a left-translated cycle of that degree, in other words, that cycle topped in whatever it was, 11 days, on the Amex, it would be less
than
that.
So you got only 18 more weeks to go to the downside.
Only eight. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that is
impressive.
That is what it's telling us. That's the dangers here, and people don't realize when I say the market's in a dicey position. That's what I'm saying. It is thin ice, but nothing's happened yet.
Yeah, and I think I would point out. And again, I should say that I have not worked with the Amex index for a long, long time. But I had used to have so many problems with the Amex index for a lot of reasons. Number one, both the NASDAQ over-the-counter and the Amex index have their own advanced decline lines, obviously. All you have to do is look at all the stocks on the Amex exchange or within the NASDAQ composite. And those advanced decline lines have been very, very deceptive. Oh, I'm going back to the 1970s and 80s now, and I used to follow them and say, I mean, this thing is, I mean, year after year, they would go to consecutive lower lows, even in a bull market. I mean, you could be in a bull market coming into the 60s, and you would see that thing start to go down, down, down into consecutively lower lows. So I lost a lot of trust in the New York Composite Index at that time, and I think it tends to be oil service or oil product dominated, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't know because, as I say, I don't follow it too much anymore, but that's very impressive that that should happen on the Amex index, that we should already have exceeded that low, and if that's an indication, who knows, that may be a precursor of things to come to. We need to see, obviously, these other indexes immediately within the next week or two at the most start going down to new lows, or else there's probably something else happening here. I think you'll agree with that.
I do, and that was my point. You know, all of these averages, you know, they pretty much ebb and flow together. And when I say together, I mean cyclically. You know, you're not going to make a low, an intermediate or higher degree low in one index and not make it in the other. And it may not occur in the same day or even this. It's going to generally occur within days of one another, but maybe not the same day. And it may not, and particularly with tops, they may not top in the same day. There may be a lot more of a discrepancy there, but generally the lows tend to occur, in very close proximity. So that was my point, is that I think that it may be a precursor. It does appear to be a precursor looking at the Amex.
Yeah. Let's do something else and have a little fun here, Tim, because this is something that I did either last night or the night before. You know, as you know, I do price projections, and the reason I love price projections is, first of all, they tend to have a certain amount of accuracy to them. No one can ever foretell exactly where the market's going or where an advance or a decline will stop. But price projections, this is the Hearst method of doing price projections, have an uncanny tendency to be able to give us at least some kind of idea what's happening with the market and where we can begin to look for important turns to take place. So what I did was I started looking at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and I have different cycles, of course, nominal 5-week, nominal 10-week cycles, and shorter ones than that, nominal 10-day, nominal 20-day. So I went and I looked, and I remembered that there was a downside Now I do it. I do the cycle projections two ways. I should add, I do them on with bar charts on an intraday basis. So you give intraday projections, up, both up and down, obviously, and the projections are based on intraday highs and lows, and they give projections for intraday highs and lows. But a long time ago, I began doing closing price projections too, and sometimes the numbers that you use are significantly different. I remember when we had that first decline coming into February 7th, 8th, 9th time zone, the intraday low that we had there, especially overnight, I think it was on Globex, was very significantly different than the closing low. So the closing price projections from time to time tend to be quite different from the intraday ones. All that having been said, I want to go through a sequence of events with you here, and this will take a couple of minutes, but we should have a lot of fun doing it. I have an outstanding projection on the Dow Jones Industrial Average for a close. This is a closing price projection for a close somewhere between 22,943 to 23,186. Now, the previous closing low, as you know, was 23,860. So if we just go down to the upper side of that projection, around the 23,190 level, that will be a significantly lower low. And the projections say we're going to do that. Now, the important thing about the projections is they remain in effect until they are either met or invalidated. This one, in order to invalidate it, one, two, three, four, let's say within the next 6 or 7 trading days, if we stay where we are or go higher, if we are higher 6 or 7 trading days from now, we will begin to invalidate that downside projection. But until or unless that happens, we have those projections. So now let's take the midpoint of those projections around 24,900 and go on to the next longer chart. If I take the 24,900 and go down to the next longer chart and assume the prices are going to go down there, we get somewhere, it's pretty close to the same projection on the next longer chart. And I should give these names by saying that the next longer chart is an offset of 48 days, so that's 10 market weeks. So it's a nominal 20-day offset. By the way, people will say, well, there's not 48 days in a market days in 10 weeks. There's 50 trading days in 10 weeks, and they got to remember that there are holidays. So on average, there are like 4.84 to 4.87 trading days per market week if you take holidays into consideration. And so I do that with the cycles. But the next longer cycle gives a projection down to, let's say, a midpoint of 22,000 or around 680. So if we go from there to the next longer cycle, and remember 22,680, and we look at the next offset, should we go down to 22,680, that's about right here, that would give us a projection down to between around 19,200 to around 20,186. If we take the midpoint of that projection, this is like a little bear's fantasy, but these are all realistic numbers, Tim, believe me, in looking back. Doesn't mean they're going to be reached because we only have one projection that has been confirmed so far. We're just doing kind of a waterfall thing here and saying if this one is reached, then this one could be given. If that one is reached, then this one could be given. So we're now at a nominal 40-week projection, which would take us down to around 19,700 to round it off, because that's the midpoint of the projection. So from 19,700, we go to the next longer, the next projection possibility. And if we get down to 19,700, that's way down there, then I can tell you by taking my little projection tool here that that would give us a projection down to approximately, isn't this fun? it would give us a projection down to, let's see, get rid of this and bring my projection tool down here. that would give you a projection down to an area of around 20,000 on the Dow. Now, if we get that projection, if that projection turns out to be true and we go down to the 20,000 level, you will almost certainly get a nominal four-year projection, I believe, is the next one. And that one could take you down to 16,607. No, that's not the four-year. Hold on a sec. 16,000. And then the very last one, if we get down to 16,000, the man says with a hint of a smile on his face as he says it, we go down to 16,600 within the next, let's say, 3, 4, 5 months. People say, what, are you crazy? We're not going to do that that soon. Well, we're just talking about this crazy bearish fantasy. That would give us a projection somewhere between 8,900 and 10,500 on the Dow. And that's all.
Wow.
That's all this year, theoretically. So now, am I making that projection now or making that prediction? No, not at all. What I'm saying is that you don't often set up, you don't often get yourself in a position where you can get these kinds of waterfall projections, one leading to another. Because usually, if you start to get a projection and say, well, okay, I can see that, but if we make that projection, then it's not going to give any other projection. If you look at your other offsets, you say, no, we won't reach down to any other offset. And so if we get down there, we'll obviously turn and spend some time and perhaps rally back to new highs, whatever, we don't know. But we are definitely set up now so that we could get this group of waterfall projections that could take us down to 8 or 10,000 on the Dow. I mean, that's incredible.
It is. It really is. And the thing is that, Peter, that's kind of what I'm seeing. Well, it's not kind of. It is. It's that's the seriousness of the structure that I see with this left translated cycle. Because if it sets up like that, then it's going to leave us positioned with the proper structure for such a move to occur.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about a 20-week cycle that because it's left translated, is 18, 19 weeks to run to the downside, that's the kind of damage that can be done. I mean, these are fanciful numbers, and they may be bearish fantasies, I don't know, but they are within the work I've been doing for, I don't know, 35, 40 years now, Tim. They're not so fanciful that they can't be made realistic, is what I'm saying. And there's a legitimate cyclic way of getting down there. And I know that's incredible because we're talking about the possibility of, I mean, that in itself would be a 65, 75% decline. I don't think we ever see anything like that in 1 year in the market. But we are, remember, in many ways, at the top of the most overvalued market in history, and a market where we've seen incredible amount of complacency, where people think, well, yeah, of course we can go down 10. I mean, we deserve a 10% decline. We haven't had one of those in such a long time until this most recent one. But that's all we're going to see for now. We're going to see 10, 15% declines and then go up to new highs again, because that's what markets do.
Exactly. Exactly. Of course. Let me ask you this, Peter. Looking at it on the upside, like I said, I see, to me, that February low is absolutely vital. I mean, that holds all the cards. And it's going to set the stage for, like I said, either the structure for something much more bearish to begin to unfold, or it's going to set the stage for one more push up, and then, depending on if the markers reappear, set back up, what happens there, then that could set up to be the final top. Looking at it on the upside, let's say that this holds and we don't break down here. How does that fit in? Have you looked at that side of the equation? Can you account for such a move in your work?
Well, you know, Tim, we always, regardless of how confident we are in a position, we always have to allow for things that go completely against what we think we see happening in the market. I mean, for a long time now, with you and with other people, with my own people, I've made the argument that this would be a very unusual market top, because there were some markers that we lacked seeing there. You almost always see more than a 2 or 3 day divergence between market indexes and the AD line, and that's all we had this time. We had an AD, daily AD line topping on January 23rd, and most of the market indexes topping on a closing basis on January 26th. That's not the kind of advanced decline line divergence that one would expect to see at a very major top. So based on that alone, you can say, no, but based on long-term market history and the percentages, we have to expect that there will be a higher high than the January 26th one. And you can make that argument, I guess, in several ways in terms of prior market history. I don't know if I mentioned this one with you before. We may have talked about it before. But one of the scary statistics for me for having a bearish attitude is I saw some data that were presented by a person I don't know, so I don't know how reliable the data are. But I saw some data that was that purported to go back to the early 1900s, in fact, to the inception of the Dow in 1897, 98, whenever it was, and looked at every important market top that occurred. And the way they counted market tops, I think there were, I don't know, 9 or 10 or I can't even remember now, 9, 10, no less than 9 or 10 and no more than 15 to 18. But anyway, every single market top over the last 100 years or so. And what they looked at that market top in the Dow was what percentage of Dow stocks were within 2% of their all-time, not their all-time, of their bull market highs. In other words, in that particular bull market coming to an important high, how many Dow stocks, as that high was being made, were close to, were within 2% of their bull market highs? And the interesting part of the data was that virtually every other important market top in the past 100 years, never were there more than 30 or 35% of Dow stocks that were within 2% of their highs. So in other words, you saw it, internal deterioration in the Dow, and fewer stocks were making new highs, but nonetheless, the average went to a new high, and that's where it formed its bull market top, but with very little participation, no broad participation by all the Dow stocks, whether they be 30 as there are now, or a lesser number earlier on in the 1900s. And what that told me was, well, what about this time? What about January 26th? The supposed data, and again, I don't vouch for this because it's just something I read, supposedly at that January 26th closing all-time high in the Dow, 63% of Dow stocks were within 2% of their bull market highs. And that scared the bejeepers out of me for a bearish case because that's telling you that twice as many as at any other time in market history, Dow stocks were within 2% of their highs as this high was being registered. The suggestion there, and a very strong suggestion, again, if the data are correct, the suggestion is that that was not a final high, that you're going to see a final high, but you're going to see one with significantly lower percentage of Dow stocks at that all-time high to be registered. So that data like that I pay attention to, not because I trust the data, but because there's a long history behind it. One of the first things that attracted me to your work, Tim, going way back to the article you wrote in Stocks and Commodities magazine, was the fact that you actually know what market history is. You know that market history doesn't go back 10 years or go back 15 or 20 even. Market history goes back at least 100 years on the Dow, and certainly we even have data that goes back a lot further than that. And unless a person has a concept of the long-term history of market data, I tend not to pay too much attention to them. This indicator purported, as I said, to go back to the early 1900s, so it's something that I was forced to pay attention to.
Absolutely, and see, to that point, Peter, looking at my data, you know, you mentioned the AD line, and you're right, there was a 2 or 3 day non-confirmation, and that's one of the DNA markers and that I use in regards to the 4 year top, and you know, it being as short lived as it was or is, that made me, that's, you know, I've taken a position with, because of that, my intermediate term AD line, I only have like a 6 week, non-confirmation. That's always there, but it typically occurs across a couple of intermediate term cycles. And obviously, you know, 6 weeks, that doesn't, you know, it's short-lived, but it's there. The Dow Theory non-confirmation, another marker, it's short-lived, but it's there. And so my position has been, yes, we have these markers in place. I mean, technically they're there, but looking at that, and another one, talking about long-term data, you know, in January, we recorded the highest 14-month RSI reading in history, going back to 1800. I have the Dow data going back to 1896, and Bob Proctor years ago gave me some data that approximated the Dow going back to 1800, and we recorded the most overbought reading on a monthly close ever. And when you look at that data, break it down, the other thing you see is that typically at the tops, there's some sort of a non-confirmation with that. So yes, there are all these things that suggest, and that's been my position, that we should have another, in my world, another one of these little annual or seasonal cycles up. But then at the same time, we said here on thin ice, where if we break with this left-translated cycle, then something else may be going on.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and I know exactly where you're coming from, Tim. I had noticed that RSI reading myself, and you very seldom, I've had quite a bit of experience with the RSI. I won't say never, because I've seen exceptions, but you very, very seldom reach an important market top with a coincident reading on a 14-period RSI, regardless of what your time period is, whether it be daily, weekly, monthly, in the mid to high 80s, and that's where they were at the recent high. When you see that type of thing, you say, no, there's got to be, we've got to build up some kind of divergence. Now, I will say this, and perhaps this is searching for excuses and straws on the bearish side. I don't recall seeing the kind of parabolic rise on the Dow. I guess maybe 29 would be maybe the only other time that you might call the ending rise somewhat parabolic, but all the other market tops didn't have this kind of rise. And so that kind of parabolic top would suggest, because of the very nature of a parabola, that before it broke, you would have these incredible readings to the upside on momentum indicators like the RSI.
So, I totally agree.
So that would be the one exception that we could make in this case and say, look, this is an extraordinary situation. This is something we've never or maybe once ever seen before with a Dow, and that's one of the things that's going to fool so many people, because a lot of people know you don't make market tops with RSI readings of 85, 86, 88, whatever they were. You come down, and then you go back up, and you have a divergence. Well, who knows this time around whether it's going to be different. It's difficult to, I mean, we always make fun of, at least I make fun of people that say, if you talk to them about valuation in the market, they'll say, yeah, but this time is different because, you know, they never had the kind of technology before that we have now. And this kind of technology means that markets are going to go to incredible price-to-earnings ratios and dividends don't mean anything. And all the old market data that you old guys used to look at is just not important anymore. We millennials know that. And so we know that you might think we're overvalued, but we're not. Well, we don't like that this time is different argument, because usually only 99.9% of the time is that wrong. This time is different. It's never different, or hardly ever. So for us to argue that, well, wait a minute, this time might be different with the RSI is dangerous territory, but I still hold on to the belief that that might be the case now because of the parabolic structure of the Dow when it broke down.
Well, I think the one thing that's been different this time is that it has stretched on much longer than any of us ever imagined. You know, you look at valuation models and, you know, some of the technical tools and statistics and so forth, and it's just blown through, you know, virtually everything. But that doesn't change the fact, and what's not different this time. And I asked you a question one day on the phone, and I said, was there any doubt in your mind if this is a bubble? and you want to answer that in public?
Oh yeah, I mean, I can't conceive of anyone that with the qualification that I spoke of a few minutes ago, that anyone that's aware, truly aware and educated about market history, could look upon this market as being anything but one of the great bubbles of all time. And not just, the interesting thing is, it's not just the stock market, it's virtually everything.
Everything. Peter, it's everywhere. Man, look, I see it just in observation with everything from watches to stereo, vintage stereo equipment. Let me tell you, I don't know if you're into that. That's something I've recently just really gotten into, is the old vintage stereo stuff. And man, I have watched, I mean, some of this vintage stuff is up. I mean, it's just, it's insane. The bubble is everywhere. And
absolutely, yep. Yeah, that would be collectibles. I guess you'd classify the old equipment as collectibles and art things. Did you read that story in the paper the other day where we're close to having a first $1 billion article of art to be sold?
No, I didn't.
I mean, that's inconceivable. $1 billion for a piece of art?
It's insane.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
It's insane. It's insane. And so, yeah, I have no doubt. You know, yes, it's different this time in the size of the bubble, but the fact that it's a bubble is no different. And here's the thing. You're right, Peter. I think you're right. I agree with you anyway, that, you know, that these extreme readings may be a reflection of the extremity of the bubble. And so it could be different this time that we don't see, you know, some of the classic warnings. But the thing is that goes back to, in my world, the importance of that Dow theory, primary bearish trend change. That's kind of the safety net, and it will solidify these markers, as marginal as they are. You know, I don't know at this point. Like I said, if the February low holds, then I think, yeah, we're going to get another push up. If it doesn't hold, then I think things could be changing. I mean, I would have to say things have changed, because it's going to give us a primary bearish trend change.
So let me ask you this, Tim. You say if that February low holds, will we know if the February low holds, or do we have to wait till we go to new highs? Is there a level on the way to the upside that you can say, well, we haven't gone to new highs yet, but because we're at this level, I think the February low is going to hold?
Well,
do you have a level between here and the high on January 26th that would make you think that February low is going to hold?
The translation of the cycle. Right now, let me see if I can answer the question this way. We have, you know, it's a cycle within a cycle. We have the intermediate term cycle, and then there's a shorter term cycle that averages about 30-something days. Right now, they're both left translated. So if we can see that 30-something day cycle better the previous high, which, you know, as of right now, it topped in 11 days, then right, that would tell me it's more the structure, it's more the time. If we see that 11-day top, forget what the date of that high was, but if we can better that high here in the next, you know, few days, week, whatever, then I would say, okay, it's going to hold. And it then, at that point, that odds are favoring a new high, a new intermediate term high. But, and you know, that last push into, or conceivably last push into that seasonal cycle top. But if we don't break above that high, or as long as we don't break above that high, let me say it that way, then I think that the odds are that we are subject to go lower.
Okay, that high, by the way, the 11-day rally high that you talked about, was the one that we noted when we talked about the trend line on the New York Composite, and it's the exact same day in January. So we have January 26th and February 26th. By the way, I went back and looked at that New York Composite trend line again. This may turn out to be a very well-timed interview, because that New York Composite Index, if you look at the closing price chart, I said it was close to, but maybe 9 or 10 points away. I was wrong. I redrew it and put it exactly. I have the software can put it exactly on the close. And I hadn't done that first time around. I did it this time around. The New York Composite Index closed virtually exactly moving from underneath to that trend line that defined the close on January 26th and February 26th. Now, again, as I said, there are a few options. We could go a little bit above it and turn down. But more often than not, in the kind of market that's going to be importantly in terms of a turn, you go to that trend line and you'll turn from there. So we closed almost exactly on that downtrend line January 26th, February 26th on the New York Composite today.
That's very interesting.
Tomorrow is going to be interesting.
I got another question for you. I know you, or I don't think you do a lot of work with, you know, commodities and gold and that sort of thing, but I just want to ask you a kind of a general question. I want to put you on the spot on some work that you may not do. But looking at, from my seat, when I look at gold, you know, I've been saying, because of the structure and without digressing too far on that, that the 9-year cycle low appears to still lie ahead. When I look at the 3-year cycle, which is the dominant cycle on the CRB, I think that we're flirting with a 3-year cycle top. We tried to roll over out of that top last January. When I say last January, January 2017, we saw a push back up into that high, kind of a double top type thing. So I think commodities are flirting with the top. I look at the BDI. There's a 3-year cycle there. So what I'm seeing, point being, is that commodities, the whole basket of commodities seem to be trying to set up to roll over as equities are setting up to roll over. And what I'm seeing is something very similar to, I've been following it for a while, and I'm not following it because, how do I say this and it sound right? I'm not saying that this scenario with this so-called Babson chart fits because I think it's a bubble and everything's going down again. I'm saying it because I'm looking at the structure of the cycles, and the structure of the cycles are very, very similar. So I just wanted to ask you about that. Do you see a scenario where if this equity bubble does burst, that it takes virtually every asset class down with it?
I don't follow those commodities or commodities in general that closely, but I absolutely do. I mean, that relates to what we were just talking about. This is, and I think our buddy Bob Prechter calls it an all markets at the same time or something to that effect. I mean, that's the kind of position that they're in. Virtually everywhere we look, we tend to see things that are in a bubble, and that includes the commodities, although they've been beaten down. A lot of people are claiming. I know some very intelligent money men, and a friend of mine in particular, Paul Tudor Jones, one of the brightest market traders of all time. I think I read recently that he is turning to commodities to make investments in. So there are some people that are thinking that commodities might indeed do very well. But my feeling is that this is going to be a deflationary scenario. That's the one that fits in, I think, best with the long-term economic cycles, Tim. And if it's a real deflationary scenario, we've had at least for several years now disinflation, if not some real deflation. But if we start to see real deflation step in, that's not going to be good for anybody. And that's going to be painful all around. And it will hit virtually all items, whether it be commodities, gold, silver, stocks, real estate. I mean, look at some of the real estate bubbles. They're just unbelievable. There are corrections out there to be seen, Tim, and some of them are going to be very dramatic.
Yes. Well, Peter, we're getting a little long. You and I, it seems like when we get on, we could talk forever. I guess that's a good thing. Well, why don't we wrap it up? Do you have any closing comments or thoughts you want to leave everybody with?
No, not really. I think that we've covered most of the things that I'm looking at. And again, I was fascinated by that Dow waterfall series of projections that could be lining up over the next, you know, God knows how many months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, maybe a year. But the way those things are set up, if they happen that way, we're just lined up where the dominoes start falling one after another, and we have the perfect storm, you know.
Yes.
Unfortunately, but the perfect storm.
Yep, and the structure, like I said, the structure, you know, it's the jury's still out on the structure, and like I said, if the dominoes fall right where the structure is kind of locked in, so to speak, then it becomes very, very possible. You know,
yep.
I mean structurally possible. All right, well, Peter, let's see what happens. I have had some requests that people wanting to hear what we were thinking, and guys, we've just been waiting until we kind of had more to say, but depending on what happens here in the next week or two and how this, you know, the structure with this February low, Peter, something happens, maybe we can get back on pretty quick and do another interview.
Sounds good, Tim.
All right. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.